for tat, Sid.
Pardon, Gov? What is?
Somebody with powerful headlamps causes Arnie Hatch's automatic bedroom curtains to open when, to use Miss Tea Time's description, he and another middle-aged satyr are cavorting in the altogether with a pair of nymphs. Now, Councillor Crispin's brand-new yacht sinks as he's leading the Commodore's muster and apparently having a race with Arnie Hatch.
So?
So, was the driver with the powerful headlights, who not only made the curtains open but played a fanfare on his horn and stayed on to illuminate the orgy for the neighbours, Councillor Harry Crispin? Was Arnie Hatch behind the sinking of Crispin's boat? Somebody, we are told, has hired an American assassin to murder a Flaxborough worthy or wheel. Is the issuer of the contract Harry Crispin or Arnie Hatch? Is the wheel or proposed target Arnie Hatch or Harry Crispin?
I see what you mean. They've been at each other's throats since I can remember, but murder?
The wrecking of £25,000 worth of motor launch must feel very like murder to a man as materialistic as Harry Crispin. I'd like you to go and have a poke about on the river.
What for?
For something that might have ripped the bottom out of Harry Crispin's boat.
What am I looking for?
Oh, use your imagination, Sid. Could be a log or a spike or an old bulk of timber. Something rotten that had lie on the bottom but could be pulled to the surface at the strategic moment.
Crumbs.
Exactly. We could never prove anything, of course, but I'd like to know. In the meantime, I want to call in on Miss Tea Time, see just what she knows about this Mr. Joseph Tudor from New York. Also, I'm going to check the hotels and boarding houses again. There may be other Americans in town that we don't know about.
So, we have an intake probability of 1,400 chickens per 30 days, and... Oh, morning, Ed.
Good morning, Jules.
Oh, sure. Edmund. I guess you have a pretty established pattern, formality-wise.
Yes. I'm called Mr. Amis by all but my employer. You're making yourself at home, I see.
Sure, but don't worry. We're just in fly-on-the-wall mode at this point in time. You're looking for the mail, right?
I am.
I have it already, if you'd like to see it.
It is customary for me to open Mr. Hatch's mail.
Most important for us to make a sample assessment of your communication situation.
Then, in future, I suggest you assess it after I've seen it. You're sitting at my desk, Bernard.
Bernard? Sure. Just getting the gut feel of these ledgers.
Pretty indigestible, I'd have thought, Bernard. What's this? You seem to have missed part of our communication situation, Julian.
Oh, sure. I didn't open that letter. I assumed it was something private. But the telegram I did open. It is in my recollection that Mr. Hatch was unspecific in relation to the confidentiality of telegrams. Quite puzzling. To Hatch, Floridora, Flaxborough, England. Philadelphia deal closed. $3800, stop. Naked nuns with cover dispatched today, stop. Note increase, reason extra commission bishop, stop. Dallas report false, no nuns, believe supply ended, certain, stop, pace. Mean anything to you?
Not a thing.
Some sort of code?
Some sort of joke, more likely.
Joke?
You've heard of jokes?
Oh, yeah, sure.
We do have our wags in these parts.
But it was sent from America, from New York in point of fact.
So it was. Well, that simply makes it more elaborate, that's all. I can't imagine that any of old Hatch's enterprises require a code. Haven't you learned yet that they like playing games in this town?
We have certainly encountered some pretty counterproductive attitudes. The guy who's in the payroll is a gardener, but who seems to be a general handyman.
Joxy! Yes, Joxy does a bit of everything, and counterproductivity is his middle name. His other middle names are malevolence and mindless violence. He hails from the very toughest part of Glasgow, and he'll headbutt you at any point in time of the day or night if the mood takes him, and that can be pretty distressing, nosebleed-wise.
My dear Inspector Pertwright, what a delight to see you again so soon.
I was just admiring your new, or rather, additional sign. Fam trees, genealogical consultants, ancestral research. Things slack on the Flaxborough and Eastern Counties Charities Alliance front?
Busier than ever, Inspector, but one must diversify, as they say nowadays.
Would you care for a cup of tea?
I should indeed, thank you.
Have you come here on a professional matter?
I have.
Your profession or mine?
Put it this way, I have come to consult you.
You will not regret it. Pertwright is a splendid old name. We might get you back to the hospital as a St. John with moderate good fortune. Or have you a preference for less piratical antecedents?
I have a preference for a drop of whiskey in this tea.
How remiss of me to leave out the Highland Fling. There's a new half bottle by your elbow, behind Burke's Peerage. Do help yourself.
Flourishing, is it, your consultancy?
It does seem that I've brought to light a long-felt want. To be able to give people a sense of belonging is a reward in itself, of course. But I do have to make a nominal charge, alas. As you may imagine, Rouge Dragon would be down on me like a ton of bricks were I to follow my natural instinct and waive the fee.
Yes, I suppose he would.
But in fact, people are very happy to pay for what I term the comforting shade of a nice family tree. Mrs. Hockley, for instance. And this is in strict confidence, naturally, Inspector.
Mm-hmm.
Mrs. Hockley from Cadwell Avenue, whose husband was an alderman and a dipsomaniac, I forget in which order, I can now only describe her as a transfigured woman.
Indeed.
Oh, yes. I was able to establish a strong trace of Marlborough there. If we all enjoyed our rights, Mrs. Hockley would have her feet up at Blenheim Palace at this very moment.
Small world.
She entertains no bitterness, fortunately. A less philosophical lady would be importuning the Churchill trustees. One has to be so wary in the lineage business. A lady from Snowdon Avenue, I remember, whose connection with the House of Hanover seemed a distinct possibility, took it upon herself to write some very disrespectful letters to our dear Queen. I had to veer her line a little towards the Stuarts in order to persuade her to desist.
My errand this afternoon is to do with the House of Tudor, Miss Teatime, and in no genealogical sense, I'm afraid.
Oh, a lamentably disreputable dynasty. Libertines, hedge choppers, and bigots, one and all. I never advise a client to seek relationship with them.
The client I'm talking about is an American gentleman, and his name is Joseph Tudor. I don't think he has come all this way to claim kinship with Henry VIII.
You've had this man followed, have you not?
To anyone but you, I would say that he has been kept under surveillance as a matter of routine, but I hope you give me credit for regarding surveillance and routine as mutually exclusive terms.
Would that more policemen were of like mind.
The fact is that we're a little nervous of Americans in Flaxborough at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Ungenerous of us, perhaps, but there has been talk of murder.
By someone from the United States?
The warning came from New York, certainly. It's only sensible to heed it. Oh,
naturally. This Mr. Tudor is not, as I think you surmised, a client. He is a friend of a friend. More accurately, an acquaintance of an acquaintance.
Do you know anything about him?
Not a great deal.
Why did he come to Flaxborough?
Family business, it seems, Inspector. He was not specific on that point, and of course I did not press him.
Then what was his object in calling on you, Miss Teatime?
In part, to pay the respects of our mutual acquaintance, as I have intimated already. Also, to inquire the whereabouts in this locality of the Catholic Church. It appears that Mr. Tudor is of the popish persuasion.
Did he by any chance seem interested in nunneries?
I can't say I received that impression. However, Mr. Tudor obviously is a devout man. It may well be that he likes to sample the native cloisters when he travels abroad. But surely you seem to be preoccupied with nuns when I called to see you the other day. You're not developing a fetish of some kind, are you?
I assure you that I'm merely pursuing a line of inquiry.
Oh, I'm relieved to hear it.
This friend of yours who introduced him, I suppose you feel you can depend on his judgment.
He's a merchant banker.
Ah.
Mr. Tudor has substantial financial interests in his own country. I understand he's extremely influential. His compatriots have even made him a member of the committee for re-election of the president.
I'm impressed, I think. Have you plans to see him again?
Only very briefly, I hope. He promised to call at 5 o'clock to collect a dinner ticket he commissioned me to obtain.
A dinner ticket?
A medieval banquet ticket, to be precise.
The Floradora?
The same. Mr. Tudor feels he cannot let pass the opportunity of gnawing a bone or two across the centuries. He's a perfervid traditionalist.
Every path I tread just now seems to lead to the Floradora.
Oh, it is a most popular establishment.
So it seems.
The Flaxburn Eastern Counties Charity is alive? Yes. Well, yes, he is.
It's for you, Inspector.
Oh, thank you. Purbright? Yes?
has he now? I'll go straight over there.
Not trouble, I hope.
Only time will tell. But once more, it concerns the Floradora. These tickets
are difficult to come by. I often wonder at the eagerness of people to part with their money in return for a blend of nostalgia and dyspepsia.
A distressing thought. But I was wondering if you might repeat for me the favour you did for Mr. Tudor.
My dear Mr. Pirbright, if I could not oblige a friend in so small a matter, what would be the use of my having been appointed an official agent? You have to dress up, you know, though the establishment provides suitable medieval costumes. How many tickets would you like?
One. And I should appreciate a receipt, if you'd be so kind. The lucky gourmet I have in mind is a policeman, and he'll be there on duty.
I'd not have called you an inspector. Only Edmund, Mr. Amis, my private secretary, you know. He thought I should. Oh, he's a worrier.
I think he's right to be. A threatening letter from America or anywhere else should be taken seriously. Has anyone ever threatened you before, Mr. Hatch?
No, never.
You've never been, how shall I say, subjected to pressure in the hopes of getting money out of you, I mean?
Well, only people I owe it to. I suppose you mean blackmail, do you?
It's a generally understood term, Mr. Hatch.
Ah, well, if this letter's blackmail, it's a pretty cack-handy way of going about it. It just says I'm going to get done in. No ifs, no how much, just the chop.
The letter refers to your being behind in certain payments, sir. It is, in fact, a dunning letter. Now, I don't suggest for a moment that physical assault, much less murder, as implied here, is a tolerable form of debt collecting, but if you do owe money to someone, you must tell me.
No, no, no. Nothing outside the ordinary business commitments. Well, bills come in, they get paid, and that's that.
Well, this is certainly not an invoice in the accepted sense. It would seem to refer to dealings outside your normal commercial field.
You will never mind what it refers to, Inspector. It's a threat, and a damn nasty threat. All I want to know is what you're going to do about it.
Well, everything we can, sir, obviously. But you can help us in the first place by answering some questions.
You're taking this seriously? Oh, all right, I can see that you are. Well, then we can start by you telling me what you know and I don't.
Very well, sir. We've had a warning from the New York police that someone over there might be planning to come to England, to Flaxborough specifically, in order to kill someone living here.
Get away. Me, you mean?
No details were given. The only name mentioned was that of the town itself. I'm relieved, in one sense, that you've been threatened directly.
Oh, thanks very much.
Well, at least we now know whom to protect.
Well, are you confident that you can protect me? I mean, that's the point, isn't it?
I will have a man here this evening, in plain clothes, as a guest. I would be happier if you stayed out of sight.
I can't do that.
It would be wisest, Mr. Hatch. No point in courting danger. I'll organise our other duties so that my sergeant and I can call in from time to time during the evening.
And what'll you be looking for, specifically?
Well, I suppose we have no choice in that. But to be looking for an American hitman.
Do you believe in love at first sight, Luce?
Well, I'm told on good authority that it happens, though I've never been personally smitten.
Neither had I, Luce, before.
Before?
I loved my wife, Luce.
I'm sure you did.
My Maria Luisa was the royal to me.
I'm sure she was.
I thought no other could take her place.
I'm sure they couldn't. Now, I really must be getting back to
No, wait, Luce. I said I thought. That was before I met you, Luce.
Ah, well, you see...
Don't say nothing just now, Luce. I know I'm coming at you like a bull in a Chinese laundry. I just want to plant the seed. Well, like the song says, in the garden of your heart, yeah? It's like we is now, Luce. I mean, sitting here in this, what is it, a monastery garden?
This is the municipal park, as a matter of fact.
See, I got kids, Luce, and they ain't got no mama.
Oh, God.
Look, see here, I just happen to have these photos. This is Giacomo.
Very personable young man.
31 last birthday and built like a mountain.
Dear me, what a dangerous place to receive an injury, that awful scar.
Yeah. Kids, eh?
And what is your son's profession?
He's an olive oil importer. And this is my youngest, Vittorio. He was going to be a priest.
Indeed. he certainly has a spirituality of countenance, even through that Mexican moustache. He has a sort of pallor about him.
Oh, yeah, well, he hadn't been getting out much in the fresh air for a couple of years before that picture was took.
I see. And what vocation was it, then, that lured him from the seminary?
Oh, you mean what's his job? I guess you could say he's in the olive oil importing business.
Now, Joe, Mr. Tudor...
Luce, you know what I'm saying to you. If you could see your way to taking on a guy like me, a guy who has respect mind and who don't take no crap from nobody, a man of honor, you know what I mean?
Yes, I believe I do.
Think it over, huh? I must go change for this medieval banquet, Cindy.
Yes, and I must... goodbye.
I'm only sorry you ain't coming with me. I could have been your Sir Lancelot, and you could have been my, what's the name? But you think I'll enjoy it, huh?
Well, I'm sure you will, Mr. Tudor. I believe they're very jolly, often quite spectacular.
All too well with Purbright. What does he expect me to do? Lock myself in the bloody lavatory?
He must have had some reason for asking you to stay out of sight, Stephen.
No reason, my heart. The more I think about this nonsense, the more I'm sure that that bugger Crispin's behind it, trying to scare me into making a fool of myself while I'm not biting. What the hell is that?
Joxy.
Looks like a coloured tent with a gnome inside. It's Bob's costume, and it's certainly not Joxy.
Now will you shut up?
Come on, Edmund, they can manage in here. Joxy will keep him in order.
And he will come out and get his leg over and let's bend. No.
We'd best stick to the gaming. The planning officer's in again. As if I didn't do him enough favours last time.
I do beg you to be careful, though, Mr. Hatch. Keep the inspector's advice at least.
There's no risk, I tell you. It's flaming Harry Crispin up to his tricks is all it is. Trying to make me look a fool.
I'm sorry to call you out, sir.
No, Mr. Pervright, not at all. Your call was fortuitous. This is Mrs. Chubb's combing night.
Combing?
The Yorkies, they object, you know. Have you ever seen them when they object to something?
No, sir, but I've seen them being affectionate.
Well, there you are, then. This letter, now, you said you'd received a letter.
A telegram, sir. It was here when I got back from seeing Mr. Hatch. I had intended to go straight out again, but I thought you ought to see it at once. It's from Immigration. Here it is.
Ah. Good Lord. But surely, isn't this the fellow who you said was staying at the Roebuck?
Yes, sir.
What? Incredible. Giuseppe Fortunino Turido, and of the Roebuck.
He must be a fair age, sir. You'll note that he was once in the employ of Al Capone. Capone went out of circulation in the very early 30s, so this Turido can scarcely be less than 65 now. Ah, Sergeant Love.
Sir?
The man whom Constable Pook is following has been identified. He is a criminal of considerable standing in the United States. A former lieutenant of Alphonse Capone, no less.
Wow! Big Al himself?
Quite so. His name is Joseph Turido. In his old Chicago days, he was known to his intimates as the Tuner, a comical reference apparently to a certain dexterity with piano wire that he'd cultivated. Mm. Neither at that time or since has Turido been convicted on any criminal charge.
Extraordinary people, the Americans. That constitution of theirs was never properly thought out, you know. All sorts of scamps could take advantage of it.
I don't know what time that affair at Hatch's Club winds up, but obviously Pook will need some backup before then. He must be sticking pretty closely to Turido. He hasn't telephoned yet.
We have no choice but to arrest this character, of course. Our own people must be protected. But is it enough simply to label him undesirable? One has to be so careful with foreigners these days.
He is the head of a criminal organisation. I'm sure the Home Office would back you up.
Oh, I don't think we need trouble them, do you? The government departments don't like that. Making waves, don't you know?
You could do him for passport misrepresentation, sir. It says here that he was born in Syracuse, Sicily. Pook saw his passport at the roll book. It says Syracuse, New York.
Excuse me a moment, sir. Herbright?
That's most astute of you, Sergeant. Thank you.
Oh, well, get back there right away. We'll be along directly.
Well, Inspector, there we are. What I believe you policemen call an open and shut case.
Yes, sir, I believe some do use phrases like that.
I think I'll go along to my club for an hour now, Inspector Pirbright, if you think you can manage.
I hope we can, sir. That was Pook. He's lost Tooradoo.
What? But I thought they were both going to the banquet.
Tooradoo obviously wanted to be alone and pulled a fast one. He somehow tricked Pook into thinking he'd gone off again in the taxi.
No.
Pook's just overtaken the taxi and found nothing in it but Tooradoo's hat on the back ledge. He's out of Brockleston-on-Sea.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, good Lord. Oh, with what we know now, the letter to Hatch, the news about Tooradoo, what are you going to do about it, Mr. Pubrat?
Head for the Floradora straight away with all hands, sir. Come on, Sid. I just hope we get there in time.
Say, big boy.
Are you talking to me?
Oh, say, you're American. I used to know. Well, quite a lot of Americans when they had that base here in the war.
Is that right?
Oh, I should say. Oh, you're awful, you young. Are you in the Derby and Joan Club?
No.
Thought I haven't seen you before. On your own, are you?
No.
Oh, you're Cardinal Wolsey, aren't you? Or are you meant to be a monk? I've always wondered what fellas wear under them habits.
Hey, see, get off, lady.
Hey. Yank. Got any gum, chum? Brought it in nylons, have you? Oh, give us a cuddle, big fella.
Hey, why don't you get lost, grandma?
Oh, well, why don't you stick that flagon up your cassock?
Are you having trouble, Peg?
That big fella there. Yank. Miserable git. Not like them yanks we remember, eh?
This is bloody boring. Now, I say, Gabby and John can't do no better than this. I'm driving Sally Arm.
Oh, this should be good then.
I should say, look, the shutting all went in the cupboard.
Hey, look, that nasty little jester's trying to fight him off.
I hope this smites him. That's what they call it in history, no, smites him. Oh, this smites him properly with terrible.
Two filthy.
Oh, no, I don't know this better.
He's a gay little beggar, though, checking on three of them.
Oh, he's down.
Oh, he's up again.
Oh,
where did they come from, I wonder?
No,
fancy. I wonder what they'll do next. I mean, I reckon they're pillaging all right, but I thought you said they...
Well, I, by right, we should be declaring everybody.
Oh, I say. Do you think they might?
I don't expect so. Hey, look, man. We're fishing out bottles all round.
Yeah, Grandma, take a bottle. This will put the roses back in your teeth and the strawberries in your nose.
Oh. How you going to deflower us? Hey, say, how you going to... Oh, I don't think you heard me.
Oh, this is nice. Take a swig of this.
Some beggars took me flagon.
Oh, swig it out, bottle girl.
Oh, nice.
Oh, the girl. Oh, that's a long stick, you know.
Come on, then. Let's follow him. Oh,
in that throat seems to hold me up. This is a terrible mess. Have you been smashed to bits? Oh, that's broken.
Oh, they do that, right, you know. What they do? If it's a bit real, but it's take no with them.
Oh, I do wish they had.
Oh, never mind. It's a lot better evening than it were last year.
What on earth's been going on?
I find it difficult to make an assessment. I mean, this Viking input module seems to have...
Viking?
Are they supposed to break down the doors and smash up everything breakable? Is this a normal input module of the entertainer?
Anyone seen Mr. Hatch?
The jester went off to look for him. These men, they knocked him out.
Mr. Hatch?
The jester. It seems to us that this is a very wasteful and dangerous element in the entertainment.
We do not consider it viable in the long term. Insurance premiums alone.
Where's Mr. Hatch?
He hasn't been in the gaming room since earlier in the evening. Maybe he went home.
He wouldn't have gone home without saying anything to me. Now, try to be clear. What has been going on?
My reading, quite frankly, is that there have been a number of counterproductive developments, but I have no specific recall of events in this regard, except that these Vikings...
What Vikings?
They broke open the wine and spirit store and gave away the whole stock. Simply gave it away. Hundreds of pounds worth. It seems to us that the refreshment input cannot possibly be equated to a cost of a ticket.
Hey, cheeky. I say, can we get to us both this way?
We want to try to catch the long ship.
The other way, ladies.
Oh, come on, Beryl. We'll have to run.
You, Bernard, go and help look for Mr. Hatch. Try his office and anywhere else you can think of.
Bastards. What bastard were they? Shown to me and...
Look, what is it, Joxie? What's happened?
He's dead. Old Hatch. The poor old sod's dead.
What? But he can't be.
He can and not be. Somebody's blown half his bloody head off!
Nothing like a party going with a bang, is there? Well, tomorrow, with the staggering news that Hatch is no longer in charge, the investigations step up apace. But in today's episode, you heard John Rowe, Paul Downing, Michael Duggan, Daniel Cole, Joseph Alessi, Anne Rye, Robin Polly, Harry Kirkham, David Fleischman, Geoffrey Banks, Catherine Hunt and Sally Whittaker. It was written by Colin Watson and dramatised by Christopher Dennis.